pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we get to the question-answer portion of the agenda, we have two reports on the superintendent's report. The first is Facilities Advisory Committee. Mr. Gerhauser, how are you going to? Great.
Does everybody have a copy of printed?
I give it to you.
Thank you.
Corinne, do you have a current copy?
No, thank you.
Paul?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
What
is that? Okay, can I make these available to the public?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Just so everybody knows.
Blank any today, pass them along.
So everybody knows, Facilities Advisory Committee was asked to evaluate the campus this year and determine what will need to be done and give us some suggestions over the next 5 years. One of the things that the board's heard, both when we went out for our bond and in general conversations, is that, you know, we should have a good idea of where we are, why we haven't done things, so that we can make intelligent decisions. And I think that, you know, Mr. Gerhauser and the team have done a good job of putting this together, so I can turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Foster. First off, I'd like to introduce the committee. We're fortunate we have Daryl as a member of the committee, Marcus Babsian, Gary Crowell, John DeBato. Takes me a while to get comfortable. John DeBato, Tom Kelly, and Corinne Bonat. So we went over, and I have to, before we get going, I have to say the staff, your staff is great. Gary, Tom, Raina's part of the committee. Anytime we've asked anything of them, they've been there. We want to show up here and do a walkthrough at 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning, they're here for us. Whatever emails, I email them. Everyone's really outstanding. Alright, so we walked through the schools, we examined the facilities, we spoke to the staff. Obviously, we have some history with the last bond issue as far as looking at the campuses. Starting with the Clayton Hewley Elementary School, a generator is suggested for this school. You have a generator right now up at the secondary campus. A generator, right now you lose your power, you lose your heat, especially in the wintertime. Well, that could be a problem. You could end up with extensive damage from plumbing leaks when you lose your heat. It's suggested if we do a generator, you'll obviously be able to be big enough to maintain the heat, your security, your fire alarm systems, and some exterior security lighting and some interior lighting. The cost on that, though, is about $450,000 on that. And, John, I think you make a comment.
I mean, obviously, you hit a lot of it, but it's not only the winter. It's the summer, too. Our storms lately, the nor'easters that are hitting throughout the season, is just doing a lot of damage. I was actually surprised when I sat on this committee, which has been a few years, that we didn't have a generator here. I always thought we did. So I was kind of surprised when I found that out. But to me, that's like one of my things that I feel is real important, because we could have a lot of loss. I know insurance covers things with papers. You can't replace papers, documents, anything that the school might have. So to me, that was one of my priorities that I felt was real important. Something I had brought up at one of the meetings, and if it's okay with the school board, about talking maybe to Lee Zeldin. I'm going to see him next week at a chamber meeting. My daughter's receiving a scholarship through the Chamber of Commerce. He's going to be there if it's okay with the school board. Maybe I could talk to him and set up something with him to see if there's any grants out there. I'm a firm believer. What's the worst they're going to say? No. It's the same thing with Homeland Security with Peter King. I brought it up. You know, reach out to the office. You just have nothing to lose.
I think that's a great idea. When I first sat with you and looked through this list, I reached out to the town to see if this is something that perhaps this was used as a, you know, an emergency facility for power outages in the community, if they would pay for it. And he said, well, that's generally a county thing, you know, where the county would, it'd be something that the county would pick up and the county would designate those types of facilities. And they reached out to the county. I haven't heard back, But, you know, I think there's many different avenues there. Yes, it's a good thing. There's a lot that goes into that, you know, from a security perspective and a bunch of other things. But, you know, absolutely, I have no, you know, no qualms with you, you know, saying, hey, I was on the committee.
Right.
Is there any, okay, any avenue here? Can we set up a meeting with the school? Seems like an interesting
That's thing. Exactly I mean, what I'm looking for.
$450,000, as you know, is a huge number. So without some help from somewhere.
Absolutely. Okay, good.
Yep.
Next, the bus loop. Immediately behind the administration building, obviously you have a parking area and a bus loop. If you've been out there, you see there's tree roots that have lifted up the pavement. There's areas of the pavement that have sunken. If you've been up here for a car wash, the many car washes we have, you see the puddles like lakes, you know, in the sunken areas of the parking lot, and they last days. Stormwater runoff does not drain properly off the pavement. And obviously, if you, anytime you get water, if it's cold, you're going to get ice.
Let me ask you a question, Darryl. Do you remember when, from the bond issuance, there was a line item in the bond, I still have it in the front of my head, for curbing and driveway work? I know it was in the initial bond. Was it in the second one?
I don't think it did.
You know, it was in the second?
Sense of that one.
Okay. Okay.
That would has a price tag of about $200,000. Do that. And then around the bus loop, the curbing and sidewalks, it's blacktop sidewalks, asphalt sidewalks, which was certainly more economical to install than concrete. But it hasn't, well, we've gotten a lot of years out of it, but anyway, it's time to replace it. It's cracked, it's sunken, it has its ups and downs. This is the sidewalk right along the bus loop here, and then also up the east drive. The curbing is damaged. There's differences in height between the top of the curb and the walking surface of the sidewalk. It should be redone, and that would be about $100,000.
And that's redone with blacktop, same type of material?
Yes, I believe, Gary, that was replacing it with asphalt,
yes.
Not concrete.
That's correct.
Concrete would be more permanent. It would cost more.
What's the life on asphalt? 10-year life or longer for sidewalks?
For what we would do, we'd probably get maybe about 10 years out of it because of the amount of traffic that we have.
Carol, if this kind of stuff is done as like a replacement, is that aidable?
A repair is not aidable.
It's a replacement, though, like if you're ripping out and replacing.
If you're ripping out and you were able to attach it to an inside project, it's aidable.
Okay. You got to attach it to an inside, and it has to be the inside has to be approximately $15,000 to be able to attach that to it. So if you're doing something on the inside for $15,000, you could actually do something on the outside for $1 million. That sounds silly, but that's the way they have it set up.
So why wouldn't you do that if you were going to do these types of things and get 60 cents on the dollar back?
Yep, 68 cents. Yeah,
68.
Next, flooring in the elementary school. I believe, if I recall correctly, it was after the 92 bond issue that we started pulling out the asbestos floor tiles. And we did the hallways first before any of the classrooms. And we put down the vinyl tile. The vinyl tile, for the most part, has held up well. But in the areas between the different school buildings, I'm talking about from the original building to the addition and the next addition, the surfaces are slightly uneven, and the tiles have cracked and chipped there, also by the exit doors. So that needs to be addressed.
Could they be, is that something where you have to do the entire floor in the area, or is it a replacement of tiles?
It's a replacement of tile, and you could break that out. It doesn't all have to be done at once. That you could definitely work around your budget. But that's about $65,000. And Gary, you're more knowledgeable than I am in this. Feel free to jump in.
What we had discussed was instead of utilizing the 12x12 tile, that we would use a linoleum product, like an industrial linoleum product, something like a Forbo, which is a very heavy-duty, very elastic type of flooring that can be waxed, cleaned, to cover up those deficiencies in the transitions between the buildings, the new and the old, as As I was talking about the transitions, where those transitions are, where they do crack and moisture gets in underneath those tiles, it migrates beyond that point, and then you have the heavy traffic load that we have on the building, and those tiles loosen up, and from years of replacing the decking underneath, the cement decking underneath has had a lot of mastic on it in the previous, so you can't really get a good seal, and we'll replace tiles, and 7 or 8 months later, even the newer tiles would start to loosen up because there's no adhesion there. So a linoleum type of product could be placed in there, and it would also allow you down the road to literally roll it up and change it if you wanted to change the design, change a wing to a different class level or something like that, because the Forbo has the ability to be imprinted with various types of designs, if you will. So you can change that along with the color of the walls or whatever. You have those alternative options, but I think that the linoleum would be a better product to put out, and that price represents the linoleum type situation.
Okay. Is that similar to what's in the cafeteria?
Yeah, kind of. What we have in the cafeteria at the elementary campus is a hybrid. That is a linoleum rubberized with the bamboo substrate that's in it. It's somewhat like that. It gives the same type of wear.
The univents, the classrooms are heated with what's called univents. It's basically the hot water from the boiler runs down to each classroom. There's a fan that blows air over the coils. At that point, the hot water coils. There's a pneumatic control from the thermostat in the room to the univent. There's a damper that should be letting in outside air, because it's not just the air temperature. What's very important is the mix, getting the outside air in there. It's the quality of the air that you want in the classrooms. The univent's 24 years old. Their components are failing, but you can change components. It isn't like we have to pull out the whole univent and change the univent. You can change blower motors. You can change controls. You can change out valves. The part of this, it comes with a price of about $450,000 to do the whole school.
How many are there?
It's more than that, right?
53.
How many do you repair a year?
We repair about 75 a year. We work on about 75 a year. We're constantly working on them.
Tweaks and stuff. Are there some that require major repairs?
A good example would have been the February 12th breach when the weather was extremely cold. Some of the univents, we found that the dampers weren't closed. They do allow 1% over those dampers, between 1% and 3%, depending upon the amount, the model of the manufacturing damper. But what happened was the coils were old. The water passes through those coils constantly, so they scour the copper lines that are inside of the coils, and the coils get weak. So even that 1% of cold air coming in, combined with the old pneumatic system, we have an air-driven system here, which means that we have literally miles of eighth-inch, quarter-inch rubber tubing running through the building that feeds from a compressor in the basement to the univent and the thermostat and gives it its marching orders and allows all of the mechanical components to operate efficiently. So we may have had some breaches in the tubing where we lose air, we lose pressure, doesn't allow the mechanics to operate properly. So
how would you prioritize when you're going through this? $53,000 or $450,000, you can't do them all, and you probably couldn't do 75 in a year. Wait a minute, there's 53, how do you repair 75 in a year?
Yeah, that's a secondary campus.
So well, there's 53 at Clayton, but you said you repaired 75.
Yeah, we were inside of them, adjusting them
right.
on an average about 75 a year that were literally...
Well, for the whole district?
Yeah.
So maybe 30 or so at Clayton. So how would you prioritize the repair, the replacements of these?
Well, I would work from the fifth and fourth grade areas, the old sections of the building first, and work my way west toward the boiler room, because those are the ones that have the longest runs as far as the pneumatics, and those are the areas that could most likely fail sooner than later. Those lines have been moved around a lot.
But they're all 24 years old in the whole building, or are they older in the old section, the original?
No, they were replaced. They were all replaced.
They were all done in 92.
In 92, okay. It was prior to my tenure here, so. But they were all at that time.
The pneumatic lines, just in case you don't have an understanding, there's an air compressor in the boiler room. You have all these copper tubes and plastic tubes running, to each classroom from the utility room. And they tend to corrode if they get condensation inside of them. They don't last. And they're not as efficient or as a digital control. This is Darryl's thing. He's building controls. He's a real asset on this kind of thing. Part of this is talking about changing out from the pneumatic to digital controls.
Is there energy efficiencies if you have digital controls?
Yeah, the in-controllability of what you can do with them as opposed to pneumatic thermostats, which are they set up, there's no time of day schedule.
Meaning you turn the heat down at night automatically from one spot.
Right. Basically, they're stuck right now with controlling boiler water temperatures. It means, correct me if I'm wrong, it means a control of the entire system as a whole, whereas you can dial in individual settings, set time of day schedules, and so forth through the building management.
Are there any kind of like, you know, the energy efficiency projects were done with lighting, with all those things where you could look into some type of...
Wait, what if you put ECM, if you look into the ECM motors?
You know what I mean?
Energy performance.
Third party, yeah.
So if they're purchased with what they call ECM motors, which are variable speed, there's a possibility there because you don't have the inrush for peak demand. So in other words, when the fan starts, it doesn't just start.
Mm.
It ramps up the speed. That can also be incorporated into the temperature control function. So if you don't need the full speed, you don't get the full speed. So everything becomes variable. That becomes much more cost effective. The other thing is...
But is there a way, I mean, I'm wondering, like, if there was a savings on natural gas and oil, if there are, like, performance... Where did we do it, like, 4 years ago, where we're getting the payback still?
Right.
What was it for? Lights?
It was for lighting. It was for the controls in the high school.
Yeah, well, with regards to the plant, there's the dual fuel option.
Right.
Do we have gas and oil right
now? Yeah, we have dual fuel in both buildings.
My question is there a company that we can talk to say, listen, we're paying X $100,000 a year for fuel?
Yeah, we have a presentation prepared for June for an energy performance for multiple.
To cover these types of things?
I don't know. I know the lighting's in. There's a bunch of other things in there, but we can also ask about this. I don't know if
absolutely.
That one's in. We're not finished with it yet. We're in the middle now of having a discussion with one of the companies.
It'd be interesting if it's something they could do, and you know, we have a certain amount in our budget now, and if there's a payback. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in here, and I'm just trying to figure out, you know, think through ways to get the work done and also get it paid for by somebody else.
That's what it's all about.
I think an advantage of the digital controls also is the remote monitoring, isn't it? And you can actually get alarms, notifications, so if you lose your heat, if something's not operating, you can be at home.
Additionally,
be notified.
There's certain fail safes that can be put into place. So, for instance, any of the new systems that are installed now, they typically have what they call a fail open scenario, where if the system goes dark, dies, the power's out, the control is bad, the valve will open and allow hot water, or water at least, to flow through the system from the house pumps. That way, you don't have stagnant water sitting in a coil with, say, outdoor air being blown in February if it was a loss of controller. So there's certain fail-safe mechanisms, freeze-stats, you know, a low-temperature thermostat that can trip and open that valve. There's a lot of different things that can be added with the digital controls.
Gary, right now you have the remote with the high school with the air.
That's correct. That's what we have at the high school now. We have the BMS system that we have up there has that capability. I can monitor, and I have many times monitored it from home. I would get a call from an administrator during an event or something.
That's the right answer. It's 100% the right answer.
Contact me and say it's too cold, it's too hot, or we're having air quality issues, and I would go online, bring that particular part of the system up. And we have graphics. It indicates a fan rotation, temperature, indoor temperature, outdoor temperature, and I could refine those points remotely from my computer or my smartphone, which, as I did over the weekend, I was not at home on a computer. I was able to do it from my smartphone. We have a minimal amount of that capability here because when we did the energy performance contract the last time and we did the BNS, we started the process here, but it never went any further. And what we can do here is we just adjust the overall temperature and adjust some of the boiler points, but that's it. As Darryl said, we would be able to go, as we do in the middle school and the high school, into each individual room and change the dynamics of each individual room. And during inclement weather and severe temperature weather, during that breach that we had here in February, I was able to look at those rooms in the high school and see what was going on in some of those rooms and adjust the temperature, open valves and things like that. I didn't have that option over here.
Thank you.
That's it for the elementary school. Obviously, the bond is addressing many things that need to be done immediately. In the middle school, my understanding, and I'll need somebody else to help expand on this, is that certain students require conditioned air in the classrooms. So right now we have several classrooms that are conditioned, air-conditioned, with portable units. This isn't efficient. The units certainly don't have a long life. And my understanding is, obviously, those students move from year to year. So we end up moving these units from year to year. For a relatively modest amount of $250,000, there's 15 classrooms. We can put an air conditioning system in those classrooms. It's a split unit. It's an economical unit, but it will work. It would have a pretty good life to it and run about $250,000. And can I ask someone to jump in on the need where they could expand on that?
The need is somewhat sporadic. I mean, we do have students that go through the system that, due to respiratory conditions, do require the educational setting to be set at a temperature that will be, conducive, especially in the hot months, such as May and June. This year we did implement it in sixth grade, so we did implement it across the four major subject areas. This is something that would, as you mentioned, Art, would be beneficial to the entire building. It is just a huge cost for us in terms of what we normally would expend for that type of service.
Those students are K-12.
They are K-12.
But I believe this would be aidable, would it not?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a capital improvement, so
yes.
this would be...
You'd rather be voter approved, but yes.
But, back when I was a kid, you were expected to sweat when you sat in the classroom. Times change. If you can make the students comfortable, I would like to think it's more conducive to maybe them learning, because I sat there looking out the window on a hot day. So...
Just to touch upon, obviously, the effect of being in sixth grade, it has made such a substantial difference. Number one, with the students that we have come in that have allergies, asthma, respiratory conditions, not just one, but we have many students. It was such a difference this year when literally, I have two thermometers in there. It was hitting 93 degrees in the room that I've always been in. So when you pack 30 kids in there, even with the windows open, you try cross ventilation, it gets so hot in there to the point where you really can't learn. So in terms of a learning environment, it was such an incredible difference this year where students, and just what Mr. Gerhauser said, were focused on learning, not sweating.
which literally is like September, October, and then really it runs into really April, May, and June. It makes such a big difference. But even just less with all the humidity sometimes, we put them on just to condition the air, get the humidity out, but it's made such a difference where the students were like, just, oh my God, I can focus on learning and not just sitting here dripping all day. It's a huge point. It's made a huge difference. But, and again, just from the health point, the amount of kids that we have with asthma, respiratory, allergies coming up, and the noise, because the way that the middle school is located, all those trucks, cars, lawnmowers that come in, we can actually keep the windows closed now, and they can listen to their teacher, not the lawnmower, the cesspool truck, all the other things that are going on. So it has made a huge, huge difference.
Thank you for that. One comment I have on that, maybe Ricardo would want to add to that. As time goes on, it seems like society is understanding the needs of students with these kind of conditions a little bit more. So from my perspective, as Art was saying, you know, when you were young, there was no requirement to do this for students. Nowadays, it seems like it's becoming ever more common. So, you know, this year we might have a few students in the sixth grade. In a couple of years, we may have a few more students coming through. So that the demand for this air conditioning may actually be increasing as time goes on.
Gym bleacher replacement. This is the middle school gym, the old high school gym. So these bleachers were put in 1978, 1979. They're 38 years old. They've been used a lot. There's a lot of activity in the last 38 years in that gymnasium. There's bleachers, the in, the out. The hardware is worn. They're wood bleachers, as you know. Some of the wood is split, it's cupped, it's twisted. And you can do some repairs, but as I'm told, if you do some repairs, you can expect there's going to be more repairs, particularly that will be required, particularly with the wood. It's time to replace them and just go with new bleachers. They're 38 years old, like I said, and it would cost about $150,000. Anybody want to add on to that?
There's something I had brought up, again, trying to see what's out there. A couple of school districts closing. Maybe we could reach out to them at some point and see if they happen to have something that we could, you know, it might sound stupid, but you don't know what's out there. Some big school districts throughout Nassau and Suffolk are closing, and at one point that building's going to be sold, and you never know what could be available for us.
Gymnasium painting?
Good idea.
Oh. No. The middle school gym, it needs painting. And it's something that we don't have the resources in-house to do with our staff. That would be about $35,000. And again, it's a five-year plan, something that not that it needs to be painted today, but it's something you want to look at for the near future. Hall flooring. Okay, the middle school hall flooring is terrazzo. The high school flooring is terrazzo, but if my understanding is correct, the high school terrazzo is about 2 inches thick. The terrazzo at the time, it was Portland cement based, and it was poured in place, you know, the stone and the marble. It's held up exceedingly well, and you can expect many more decades of use out of it. The terrazzo that was put down in 2000 in the middle school is a polymer or epoxy-based terrazzo that's somewhere between a quarter and three-eighths of an inch thick. And what's been happening is it's been bubbling. All right, and Gary actually has a count on the bubbles. He can tell you how many bubbles are in the floor. And this is on all the hallway floors. The bubbles are more and more each year. There's a point. And it's not within 5 years, but we put it in here because it's a major expense and it's something that needs to be monitored, something you need to just keep an eye on and know that you're going to have a very major expense to the tune of possibly about $1 million on this floor.
If you replace it the way it is now, not if you replace it the way Gary said with linoleum, because he mentioned that, is that a lot less expensive?
It would be. If you pull up the terrazzo to remove what's there and put down some kind of sheet goods, it would be. The sheet goods doesn't have, I don't know, 15 years? How long would you get?
Probably around 15. They're saying 15 to 18 on that one product.
If you had to.
I think that would probably cut the price down to like $500,000, $600,000.
most likely?
It would be substantially less. You also, it's not permanent.
But it's our sense that this is something to watch, something to address perhaps in the next capital bond when another one comes off.
Exactly.
Down 15 years. To have on our list of don't forget to do's.
It's not hazardous. It's just something that you know isn't that floor is not performing well. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to address it at some point. So that's why we put it in there.
Thank
Perfect.
You.
The high school. The Univex, same heating system that you have in the Clayton Huey Elementary School, you have Univex in the high school.
So these are from 79 now.
Yeah, these are older.
So, just from a layman's perspective, if you were going to say we're going to replace X number of Univex per year, would it make sense to start with the older ones or to do some in each building or what?
Well, I mean, that would be the general idea, but I'm looking at the areas in the district that have suffered the most, have the most problems with breaches, and right now we've been having a lot more issues in the old section of the building. So I mean, to prioritize it the right way would be to say let's go with the oldest, the 1, 2, and 300 wing, which they are, you know, from 1978 they were built. But we have more issues with breaching now and more issues with problems that are impacting, you know, the learning curve during the year in the elementary campus. And that's what I'm trying to weigh. You know, if we concentrated all on the high school and we didn't do what we needed to do at the elementary, we could, you know, end up having the same problems at the next time. And, you know, maybe not so lucky where we had, you know, a week of downtime that we could, you know, accomplish what we did.
Got it.
Next, at the north end of the gymnasium are some rooms we use as a wrestling room, a weight room. There's an athletic office, some other storage office areas. The weight room and wrestling room are the rooms that are used by the students. They're in there doing a lot of physical activity. You have all these teenagers working out, and you really don't have ventilation. You have heat in both these rooms, but you don't have a proper exchange of air out of these rooms into the rooms. It's something that needs to be looked at. Now, if you're going to do an air exchange, you might as well cool the rooms. And at that point, include the athletic office. I mean, you're doing that whole north end. The price of that, depending on how you're doing it, right now these are estimates, but you're going to run about $100,000.
What's an air exchange? I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, there's certain standards, and I think Daryl could jump in, but I think it's ASHRAE 90.1 is like the Bible on any kind of air exchange. Having a proper mix of exterior air, fresh air, is important for health. It's also important when you have all these kids sweating in there.
But is it a heating system that you're saying, though, or is it
a big fan? No. It's bringing outside air. It's an air conditioning system at that point. And you're mixing the air. You can also recover the energy. Because the old way of thinking, if you've ever been in any old office buildings, they never want to bring in outside air. They just keep recirculating the interior air because they don't want to lose the cooling. They don't want to lose the energy. They don't want to lose the heating. And if you're on the first floor and the guy on the third floor has the flu, you know, you're getting his air. So now what the thought process is it's everyone understands how important it is to bring in that outside. You bring in that outside air, but as you bring in the outside air, you can actually recover the energy that the cooling or heating that you're expelling. I'm sure you could word that much better, Darryl.
There's two ways to do it. So right now the rooms have heat without an outdoor air source, right? So we're not bringing in any fresh air changeovers. You know, you're supposed to have so many changeovers of air in the room per hour depending on its usage. So the ASHRAE spec will say, you know, for an office building, and say, generally speaking, 20%. For another type of facility, it may be up to 50 or 60%. They have additional means and measures where you can do carbon monoxide monitoring, carbon dioxide monitoring. You monitor the carbon dioxide in the room, and that effectively tells you the air quality. that can limit the amount of outside air that you bring in. So now if the ASHRAE spec says you need 20, but your CO2 levels are kept in a certain percentage, you may not need 20. Maybe you only need 10 to keep the air, you know, fresh and healthy. So the two ways to accomplish that would be to incorporate that into an air conditioning system, so put the cooling capability in, and also bring in that fresh air changeover capability. The less expensive way would delete the cooling and give you something called an ERV, or an energy recovery ventilator, which is essentially two fans with a metallic heat exchanger. Now what happens is the air in the space is ejected with an exhaust fan. While that air is being ejected, it's moved through a series of metallic baffles, and the heat is transferred to the air that's being pulled in by another fan that's bringing your fresh air component. So you have two air masses, one leaving, one being put in, and the thermal energy being transferred between the two. So in the wintertime, you don't throw away your heating energy outside. You capture it and bring it back into your fresh air mass. In the summertime, it works in the converse. So you're always maintaining that balance where you're not throwing away your heated air in the space, and you're not necessarily overheating the space with fresh air that you're bringing in. It's basically two fans in a metal box, so it's much less cost than an air conditioner and much less in terms of energy. It's basically just two blower motors. And it comes in a box, it gets mounted on the roof with a piece of ductwork, and you're done.
So does the item before this then address the 100, 200, 300 wings then? Because
no.
Not at all.
No, the 100, 200, 300 wings, those are univents.
Right, but I'm saying, but we're talking about air,
yes.
Middle school, air conditioning.
Right.
Does any of this address the air conditioning at the high school then?
No.
Not at all.
Not air conditioning.
No, not at all.
Univent repair or refurbishment.
No, I get it. But I'm just hearing that.
So
I'm saying we're talking about the middle school.
So the univents have a built-in damper motor
right. That
allows for that minimum percentage of fresh air to come in. So
there is air exchange.
There is air exchange in the classrooms. The problem is that it's essentially two position. If it's on, it's open. There's no regulation.
Cold air comes in the winter.
Right. So now you're dependent on that coil's functionality not to let it freeze and burst. If some aspect of the system fails in the pneumatics, you have a burst coil. Additionally, with the electronic system, the digital system, you can then incorporate into the thermostat that CO2 measurement device that will allow that damper to be proportional. Maybe you don't need to bring in as much outside 20-degree air to keep the space healthy, and that way you're not throwing your energy away. The more you open up that door and bring in ice-cold air, the damper, the more you're wasting heat. So by actually monitoring the space conditions, you can manage the amount of energy that you use in terms of fuel with your boilers. So when you go digital like that, there's so many more control facets. And then also, just jumping back to the weight room, that very simplistic system, it won't provide air conditioning, but it'll provide fresh, clean air.
You can do it both ways. You just said it's less money than this going back the other
correct.
Way. And then the 100, 200, and 300 wing we haven't addressed yet with the air conditioning.
That hasn't been addressed at all.
At all.
Right.
Yeah.
And is there a reason? Because we did the middle school. It seemed like that was for the students there and the heat and Mr. Turnout. And I'm just wondering, the high school, should we be looking at that as well? Or is that so complex that, wow, I'm opening up another whole...
We did consider air conditioning... upgrading the univent system to provide air conditioning in the high school.
Right.
And the determination, I believe, was that the plumbing was insufficient.
Yeah. Correct. The price, the cost to retrofit those 1, 2, 3 weight unit ventilators would be astronomical.
They talked about putting in a modular chiller and using that same heating piping for chilled water instead of hot water.
Yeah.
But there's flow rate capacities, the coils have to be sized a certain way, the fan size and so forth, they don't work. Math doesn't work out. So you can't use it for dual purpose. You would have had to have bought and designed the system that way from the beginning.
Yeah. But what you may want to look at, if you're going to invest the money into replacing the univents, then at that point you could look at what it would take to put in a univent that both cools and heats. It would be more money.
But you could also do it in the same configurations you talked about for the middle school, where it's a heat pump essentially. A multi-zone heat pump, city multi, we have one compressor, one condensing unit that does a whole thing and you can have thermal energy exchange and everything. You can have heating, cooling simultaneously. There's a whole bunch of different ways.
You're in middle school, though. You won't be motivated to go to high school.
We're
learning so much, and now
these same students are going to be in high school in a couple of years.
That's what we discussed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
now, we do the same thing we always would have.
The focus was on the middle school because it was students or students that were requiring it, so that's why it came up. I guess Gary brought it up that the portable units are being used now, and efficient they were, and that it's right. going to have to move with the classroom. So then we said it's going to go to the high school, and that's when we looked into right. that, and that wasn't going to work.
Just going to Band-Aid one part
but
of school, and then...
Because
it is
why,
one building, it's still one...
Exactly.
So this student or students will eventually get there.
Not too much
it's going to happen
right?
at some point.
Don't we have those same students in the elementary school?
Sure, they're individual classrooms. The only difference at the elementary is...
It's a little different when it's just one class, and the student isn't moving to multiple classrooms.
And high school...
That's
what
becomes a little
difficult.
Just
but the point is,
still
movement is in those
high school as well.
Yeah,
because those students are now transitioning to the high school. Are we now going to discuss the possibility of an air conditioning system as was indicated at the high school?
And that's what we just, you know, we talked about. Okay, they're going to finish elementary, go to middle school, and then be in high school. Now what? That's what we started talking about.
It's going to be inevitable when a student gets there. It's part of their program.
So it's a concern K to 12, not necessarily just an isolation to middle school.
All right. Then for the high school, the roof. It's the original roof. It's 37 years old. It was a 30-year roof. We'll get 40 years out of it, which is good. But you know its life is coming to an end.
So obviously this is the portion of the roof that's not being done as part of the bond.
That is correct.
So as part of the bond, we're doing by the library, by the media center, the library. We're doing
the athletic car.
The athletic car.
That is correct.
Right. So this is... the rest of it.
Right. Any of the new, the middle school, of course, is not that old. That was done in 2000, has lots of life left to it.
Right.
This is the older roof. We knew this was coming.
Yep.
You didn't want to replace it, you know, before you have to.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no problem. At this point in time, we don't have any leaks or anything of that nature with this particular roof.
It's in good shape right now.
But you do want to...
In the future, right, you're saying,
you don't want to get it before you start having water intrusion.
Yeah.
And, you know, water is like the worst that happens to a building. You just end up with problems. Too much
damage. Say the replacement of a roof as opposed to a repair is aidable.
Yes. Okay. And that comes with a price of about $500,000. The secondary campus as a whole, if you go to the north side of the campus... where the parking lot is and the drive that comes in from the east. You'll see the sidewalks have their ups and downs. They undulate a little bit. Some of the curbing is broken and beat up. It needs repairs and or portions replaced. You're talking about $150,000 to do that. The north parking lot, and Gary, this was only the north parking lot, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so the north parking lot only. We had a storm water basin collapse. That was probably about 8 years ago, Tom?
Yeah.
About 8 years ago, storm water basin collapse. The parking lot has cracks, has its ups and downs, needs to be redone. But that comes with a price of about $800,000 to redo that. Where you do it properly, you rip it out and put in a new parking lot and look at each of the storm basins, stormwater basins, and evaluate them to make sure they're in good shape.
Is this something that can be, so this is a complete repair, a removal and reinstallation of asphalt. Is there kind of an interim fix of a coat of asphalt? Or is that throwing good money after bad? I don't know anything about asphalt driveways, but...
We've had problems over the last probably 7 or 8 years. That's why the seal coating we've been doing over there every other year. We do the high school, elementary school. It's given some more life, and we do repairs every year as
right.
part of our regular bond. But it's getting to the point where it needs to be addressed.
If you're trying to look at this and Univents, and I'm just trying to get a sense from you as to, you know, are there alternatives? It'd be really great to say, let's put in a new parking lot, let's put in new Univents with air conditioning, and all of these things, I get it, and I really commend you all for the time that you spent here, but I'm just trying to get a sense, is there any interim or you know, kind of?
The lifespan of it is usually between 15 and 20 years.
Yeah.
So you're coming up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer to your question is not really. It's getting to the point where it needs to be ripped up. And
is there any way to put any of this in the current bond we have? And I'll just give you an example. We're going to be working on the septic systems, and I don't see the elementary parking lot, but I'm assuming I'll be back there as well, that has its dips as well. Is there anything like with the septic system back there that company that's doing that, it's going to be doing a lot of ripping up back there. Can they incorporate some of the parking lot into that?
The only thing that we have in that North parking lot are drainage systems. We don't have any septic systems. All the other septic systems are up front. All the leaching pools are up front, and maybe just one on the northwest corner, northwest corner by the athletic wing. We have a septic system.
What about the elementary? Because that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I don't think you could incorporate, you mean try to include it in this?
Sure, I mean, they're good, like I said, they're going to be doing a lot of ripping up back there, right? Am I wrong that there's going to be a lot?
This summer,
a lot's going to be
guess
done,
what
and that parking
happen.
Lot's right there.
I guess what could
half
happen.
Of it, maybe, or?
Aren't the existing septic tanks in the parking lot that they have to take up the caps in that parking lot?
In the north parking lot of the high school.
No, but at the elementary.
We're talking about the elementary.
Yeah.
We're here.
I think we already plan on repaving that, redoing that lot. That's being done with the sanitary system because it's necessary.
Yeah.
So that's included in the current bond. I don't know if you could stretch that out to the high school.
Well, no, maybe not there. I mean,
we may be able to. It's possible. There is, again, we have to speak with the construction management team to find out if there was a way that we could incorporate the bus loop here and this parking lot directly behind you, Josh. We do have a septic system back here for the administration building. That's the original system from 1937, I think, off when the building was built. So that's a system that's here that is old enough that we could possibly ask them to consider in the scope of work for the septic system itself, and in so doing, we could ask them to relocate that system further away from the building, which we have the right to do now because it's an old system. And in so doing, that would include having to remove some of the additional bus loop asphalt, and that would we might be able to incorporate it. And again, that's just a theory,
right? But you have to stay within.
Within the scope of what's in that bond.
Yes.
And we need to ensure that all the work that's clearly delineated is done.
That's right.
Understood. That's a good point.
All right, tennis courts. As you know, we discussed replacing the tennis courts when we were doing the first bond issue. Didn't make it to the second bond. The tennis courts, what's great about the school is you come up here on a nice spring evening or a summer evening, and the fields are being used, the tennis courts, the basketball courts. The community really makes good use of the facilities, as well as the school, obviously. The tennis courts right now, we keep repairing them every year, repairing the cracks. It's running about $10,000 a year. To reconstruct the courts would be about $276,000. And there is a point where you're not going to keep repairing them. I don't know. Do we have any idea?
Yeah, it's
how long?
This year. It's we had the bad winter. What happens is the cracks happen every year. They're going to continue to happen. Water gets in there, freezes over the winter, expands. So every year it gets a little worse. The last couple of years was $10,000. The cheapest estimate I've got this year is $14,000. So it's getting worse. And it's something that's going to continue to happen. So I know that's a lot of money, but that's something you have to look into down the road.
You know, again, I bring up about the going somewhere. Can we reach out to the town of Brookhaven, being that the taxpayers of the town are using the facility and there are no town tennis courts on the South Shore that I know of? I know when you go north, I believe they are in the Diamond of Pines or that area. Maybe there's some kind of, there we go with the grant money again, something out there the town can kind of work with us, being that, like God said, whenever you go, there's 7 days a week, and it's just, you know, there's nothing down here on the South Shore. Maybe they could do something.
The playground.
Yep. Right. That's exactly right. They did. That's why I'm kind of thinking that line.
Good idea.
Yep.
Next, the press box. The press box is that little wooden structure at the top of the bleachers. There's no electric to it, so if you're up there, you can't charge it. Okay. The my understanding of the scoreboards is that they're controlled remotely, and the control is charged up, and it's wireless to control the scoreboards. But there's a point where it dies, and we don't have power up there. If we could get a couple of 20-amp circuits up there, we could have lights, we could have a PA system for announcing the games, and we can keep the controller going for the scoreboard. That comes right now if we had to run electric from the maintenance buildings all the way out to the press box. It's about $60,000. The committee is investigating other ways of getting electric there, because we understand at $60,000, this would likely not be a high priority.
But a windmill on the top.
What about the kids riding the bikes?
Don't stop, the game's almost
over. Okay. But we do have a great athletic program. It's used by many. It would be nice to have the PA system up there.
I agree.
And building exterior, the media center. Right now we have water intrusion through, I don't know if it's coming through the brickwork or the coping, but it's getting down into the media center. That needs to be looked at. It needs to be repaired. Although we don't know the full extent of the leakage, we're guessing it's probably going to be about $50,000.
And that's not from the joint where the roof is, where it had leaks last year?
No, this is on the elliptical window system in front of the media center. Directly above that is a steel lintel that they put up.
Coming in through the top there and then
right. What's happening is if you look at those windows, you're going to see an inverted course of brick. That's a soldier course of brick that runs across there. Behind that soldier course is a flashing. It should be a flashing. Uh-huh. And what's happening is the water that does leach through into the weep holes in the brick is not going in front of the flashing, but behind.
Was it built wrong, or did the flashing run away?
It is a good possibility that there may be some areas that where the flashing was joined, they didn't lap it, that they just butted it together,
right.
And the building shifts and it separates. So we don't know, but that it from where it's leaking and the way it's leaking, that's a common scenario that the flashing it was put in incorrectly.
These are all things, I mean, we talked about these with a lot of things from the terrazzo floor to, you know, as the previous jobs were done over the last 20 or 30 years, maybe they weren't done right, and the importance of construction manager, kind of, you know, a balance sheet to stand behind him or her if there's a problem.
You know, we go back to the tennis courts and some of the parking lots and sidewalks.
Wasn't done right?
That's what you shouldn't have these problems with the tennis courts that we're having. And we've had these problems for the last 8-9 years.
Now. Yeah.
So this is nothing new.
It's so important that, you know.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's all the time.
We lack storage for maintenance and custodial use. Going back to the beginning of the 90s, we started running out of space at the high school. That's when we started converting most every storage space. I think it was room 101, maybe. That was a storage room, and now I think we use it as a computer instruction. Yeah. We converted one of those rooms. I think we refer to it as the 811 room that's immediately to the east side of the media center. That was a storage room. We had quite a bit of storage. And we were so tight, we kept converting these spaces. Eventually, we took the boys' restroom that was over by the guidance rooms right around the corner there, and we converted that into the in-school suspension room. And so anyway, when we had the bond issue in 2000, some of these things, well, the restroom, I think we converted back, but we've never gained the storage. We have done. If you walk from the high school to the middle school by the middle school courtyard there, you'll see we have tables, chairs, and things. stored in the courtyard under the overhang. They're under an overhang, but they are subject to the weather. We need storage, and we need storage that's close to where it's going to be used. What was proposed by Gary and Tom, it seems like the most economical way. If you take that area right now under the overhang in the courtyard and enclose a part of it, you could probably do that fairly economically for about $50,000. There's other things that probably should be looked at, but right now that would be readily achievable.
Excuse me, right when you walk in the main entrance, the courtyard that's right there?
No, yeah. The one to the right in the middle school. Yeah. To go right and went down the hall. They're talking about converting part of the courtyard. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Taking part of the courtyard that now I know the middle school students are beginning to work on. But you're looking for storage space, which is the bottom line, no matter how that's done. Certainly, we have taken over classrooms for students.
Storage space?
There is.
If you look at this, what we're talking about is this area here. This is under an overhang. Here's your middle school courtyard, and we're talking about this area right here.
Okay.
You'd still leave it open. You could pass through these doors into the courtyard, and if someone's in the courtyard, they can get through.
You close up all the windows that are open.
What happens is you develop it so that the areas where the windows are, they would be able to get some light into those windows. We have the middle school offices right there.
Yeah.
The other windows in the computer lab are semi-covered now by that enclosed brick courtyard. So when they're in there, those windows are dark, so they wouldn't really, make a difference in those areas. Yeah. They would still be needed for egress in case of a situation where they have to get out of a window.
Yeah, but it's not the windows in the main office. You're talking the windows in the principal's office.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you're talking about. That whole side over there full of windows.
But what would happen is on the top, what we do, we build in light.
So you have light. You couldn't see out.
Light. That's correct.
Be seen, yeah.
The middle school site use team for the school district working on plans for the middle school courtyard. So we're actually working with Mr. Roy right now on designing like an outdoor space for the middle school courtyard. So I think we should.
Yeah, no, right now what's happening, which is fine, we're looking for space. This is just one idea of how to find space in the entire secondary campus, which makes sense. Maybe not the courtyard, I'm saying space.
Basically what we need is we have chairs and tables, something, things we use every day. We have events every day, so we have it on racks right now, and that's where we keep it. Everything else we have basically out in our maintenance shed, which is across the parking lot. So if a custodian needs to get supplies, chemicals, anything we use to cleaning supplies, they get a flat cart and go out all times of the weather and night to get their supplies. But those tables and chairs, we need a place to put them. Basically, that's what we need. So it's not a big area, but you can't keep them in the boiler room. And right now, we have nowhere to put them besides the courtyard.
Yeah.
We have events we're keeping them. You constantly see them in the hallways.
One of the goals of the middle school psychics team is starting in the spring. One of our goals is to use that covered breezeway as like a hallway.
Yeah.
Just for the students, and to unlock those doors so that they can walk through there to connect kind of the front hallway to the back side of the eighth grade hallway. So our goal for next year, Mr. Ward actually, and their students are designing plans and they're presenting at our next psychics meeting, and we want to make it like, we have a few different plans. They're going to present plans. We're going to put together an idea, but to put some Adirondack chairs out there and some picnic benches, have like an outdoor learning area where students can go out there and read during their rec time if they don't want to go play in the back, and have it a little more student-centered. So our teachers working on designing like some mosaics for the brick walls and to just bring it.
So there's absolutely a need for storage.
Yes.
We've got it on the list. We'll figure out where it falls in the list of priorities and then where it can be without impacting the other good things that everybody's doing.
If I may ask Carol a question, is storage aidable?
No.
I'm not sure if it is.
No.
I think it's attached to something, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I think we talked about this.
Storage containers are not. So if you were going in that direction, portables are, but that would be probably classrooms. But this might be because if it were attached to something.
You're attaching it to the building.
Then it would be.
All right. Next, we'll try to move through this. Window stools, it's just window schools throughout the secondary campus, mostly in the high school portion. They're delaminating. They just need to be resecured, relaminated, some replaced. You're talking about $22,000, something that hopefully at some point perhaps you could work into the budget. Or when Marcus speaks about the last item, think about window stools. Anyway, auditorium stage lighting. We spoke about this at the beginning of the last bond issue, but it didn't rise to make it to the cut. But the lighting is old. LED lighting, a better control panel is needed. Not an emergency, but the lights are failing. You can't repair them. And there'll be a point where you have to do it. So that's something for the somewhat near future, $61,500. Gary, did you want to mention anything with lighting?
Just that incandescent bulbs are no longer available. We're using long neck 200 watt bulbs. Struggle to try and get them. The fixtures themselves, as Art said, they're actually a little bit older than 1978. They were manufactured in 74. We got them in 78, and so the connectors and everything are all worn, and from the heat over the years, everything is just drying out. It's doesn't, you know, as Art said, they break down. We did have an issue, but it went like clockwork. Brad took care of it during the Mary Poppins, I believe, event. If I'm correct, Brad?
Yeah, just the lighting
board.
So
we actually had the lighting of the boards malfunction because it was breaking down, but it happened at a, just so happened to happen at a time when there was a gap, I guess, in the play, and he worked his magic and got it back going. So
can this be put in also to our June presentation possibly for the energy performance? Or maybe not put to like 12
it
minutes?
It may be able to. I had a conversation last week with PSE&G to discuss they have rebates for lighting and especially when you're talking large sections of lighting, and these are large sections of lighting, and especially if you're going to go to LED light emitting diode. So yes, there's not only the potential for aid, but there's also the potential for rebates. They just initiated the 2016-17 rebate for lighting, and I'm awaiting to get that documentation to figure out what has to be done. So that is, yes, that is a possibility.
Just to add real quick, just kudos obviously to Gary and Bill Thompson. They have been, when we have outside companies come in, for example, Theatrical Lighting and Sound and Advanced Audio, the first thing they come in is like, how are you guys even up and running? Just kudos to these guys who are like band-aids on gunshot wounds. But literally, I have letters back from 2002 and 2003 from Bud Mazur, who used to do all this, that these lights were an issue. And this just addresses the border lights. But literally, like, we have taken the stock from, like, the entire United States. Literally, like, the guy's like, we can't get this stuff anymore. But, like, this year, we literally had shows where people were, I have entire sections of lighting out, and there's just, we can't fix them anymore. So even during the musical, among their concerts and things of that nature, you can see really entire sections of light that are out, and we're just beyond.
This is exactly what, you know, what we've asked for. I mean, I think when we met and at the beginning of the year, we kind of said, there's a lot of different things that need to go on. We can't fund all of them, but if we don't know, we can't make that kind of intelligent budgeting decision at budget time. So we've got, I think, a great list. Some of them are, you know, functional, mandatory functional. Some of them are nice to have. Some of them fall in the category of we're going to have to do it in 5 or 7 years. Let's make sure it's in the next capital bond. And I think that, I mean, I don't know if anybody else from the board has anything to say, but I think that this gives us the ability to kind of go through and say, well, can we apportion a portion of our budget to do, you know, step-ups, to do maintenance items, to do repair items, and then, if so, depending upon the year, depending upon what the state does, how can we do it? And we can, you know, there will be times when, in years when, you know, the decision is, well, we can't fund any of these because it means we're going to have to cut the program in a way that's unacceptable to us. But at least we can make that decision. I think that's, at least from my perspective, that's what I would really hoping for, and I think this is great.
And Memphis has something as well.
Yeah.
Well, first, let me just follow up on your point, Josh. And when you look at these all these tasks here, right? I mean, this is probably a list that's only going to get bigger every year. Right? So you've probably got between $4 and $5 million here, and you're probably going to take care of that some form or another over 4 or 5 years. So that's a significant increase of expenditures, one way or the other, compared to the overall budget. So no matter how you do that, it's going to be expensive. And there's a real need to tackle most of these projects in some kind of urgent fashion. So one thing that we looked at, and I think it's pretty unanimous, as we looked around the buildings and we saw these projects, a lot of them, you just look and you say, you know, why can't we just do this ourselves? Why can't we get this done in-house? Why do we have to put this on a bond? Why do we have to have a separate budget item for this? And so this really speaks to adding capacity to the maintenance budget and manpower of the district. Things like lintels, scraping and repainting, I mean, there's nothing sophisticated about that couldn't be done by people that we have here or that would be hired for teachers. So things like that, painting jobs, univent refurbishing, there are a number of things that really could be tackled in a more timely fashion. And quite honestly, if you look at the economics of it, you might decide that it's even more cost effective to do it by personnel in the district. It's true that you don't get the aid that way, but you're addressing things at a much earlier stage before you have damage occurring, before it becomes a major project. So I think what everybody on the committee would recommend is that some effort be made to look at the economics of increasing our ability to do things in-house.
So maybe, you know, Gary, I don't know if you've done this or not, but if you could take this list and kind of indicate those things that could be done in-house. I mean, certainly, you know, bus loop, generator can't be, painting could be, and what the, you know, the impact of that, what headcount you'd need to do that, just so that we, again, we understand and can make that.
I think you could do the bus. I faith in you.
You know, certainly a portion of the univent refurbishing, but whatever. I mean, that's just expertise that you've got.
I'd like to second that. I like the idea when I first came in, Josh, that you had asked for this, because I think situations like this, going in, looking at a five-year plan, may have helped with some of the emergent issues we're dealing with now, because it wasn't looked forward. So I say, this is so great to know that now we know what's coming, so you try to plan for it beforehand. And with that being said, with an $8 million bond coming and going through and all this work being done, as you're talking about additional personnel, I think it's imperative to keep going what we have. We're not going to wind up in the same spot we are now with another $5 million. We just did $8 million. Like, to keep it going properly, I think
everything
it's
you're saying
great
is right. Everything you're saying is right. But I think the key, and what I want to really be clear about is, you know, we still have significant constraints. We have significant constraints through tax caps. We have significant constraints in trying to manage tax levies, caps aside, you know. So I think that, you know, this is, again, this is phenomenal. I think that it's part of the decision-making, but it's also that way. You know, it's additional headcount in one area. Generally speaking, means it's a balloon, right? You push and pull in other areas. It's not, it's got to come from somewhere. But the key is that we can make that.
I like how you identify
decision.
That.
Yeah,
you know where this stuff's coming to. You go to the airport. And
we really struggled with that. I mean, initially we had priorities on these.
Yep.
And we looked at them, and, you know, it was up to us. We would say, do all these next year.
Sure. It was up to me. And cost were not an option. I agree with you completely.
And we kept pushing them out. We said, well, when does this really need to be done? And, you know, half of them went out in 5 years, because we said, $450,000.
Sure.
There's no way the board is going to go for this, right? There's just no money there to do it.
It's that balance. I mean, we're up to us, you know. I mean, class sizes, all those different things. More electives, more programs. Where does everything fit together? And you haven't been able to figure out how to do it all.
I'm just about that. I'm just about that. I think it is.
The big picture here is that there's a significant, substantial need for maintenance and upkeep.
Yep.
District.
No.
And there's going to be a time before we can go back out to the public and ask for the money.
Sure.
With that said,
yep.
We have to kind of
we have to make sure we're managing
it all together rightly.
that was one of the things, I mean, you were right there with us in every one of the conversations we had. That was one of the things that I heard a lot. Why wasn't this focused on? And I'm not saying that it, you know, it should have been or it wasn't, but the community continually said, why weren't you guys, why didn't you save to replace the roof? And we went through the explanations.
Well,
but this allows us to say, listen, we have all these things. We've tried to, you know.
Yep. And I think everybody's on board with it was the past. So now we're moving forward. Yep. We know there's maintenance that has to be done. I mean, you guys are on the right track on doing that. And I think that's important because that's going to save the taxpayers in the long run some good money down the line with moving forward.
Thank you very much.
Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate everybody's time. I know it was significant.
Met, which was March 16th, we discussed, or Carol actually presented, the Center Ridge's tax cap levy calculation. So last time we were here, Carol explained that our tax cap at that point in time, which was reported to New York State at that time, was a 2.39. Tonight, we're going to make our recommendation. I believe on April 15th, you are going to vote as a board on Friday night. For or against our recommendation, and our recommendation is going to be at this point in time a proposed tax cap tax levy increase of a 2.34%. And we're going to explain that in detail to you tonight, but what you see is on the box below, we broke it down just to this particular slide to show you where that falls in our financial goals with the Board of Education, which we were given in August. And you're going to see that, in our presentation tonight that 1.5% of that is to support our general operating expenses. The 0.49%, which we're going to show you where that comes from, the calculation of that is to support additional programmatic offerings. And as you all know, last time we were here, we spoke extensively about the 0.35%, which has already been approved by the community last year. So it is already built in. That's not something that's negotiable or not. That's already built into our tax cap levy calculation because the board, the community voted on a bond, and now we go out for a ban for the bond. And that right now is going to be $75,000, which equates to a 0.35% increase in our tax cap calculation. So that's where we left off last time. And as we go through tonight, I'll be speaking, Rainer Rigoli will be speaking, Mr. Soto will be speaking, Ms. Perkins will be speaking, and we'll be discussing each one of the slides. The first slide is actually going to be Ms. Perkins' slide, the next one. But before we start, Mr. Gerhauser, thank you so much. You gave a great presentation tonight. But I spoke about what we've done in the past here as an administration with our budget, with our expense side. I'm just going to speak about one area that I put in red here is the maintenance repair. So you speak about, well, what are the plans from the administration? What have been the plans? I'm going to talk about that as well. But you can see that in this budget, we have built in $100,000 to our maintenance repair, which ends up being put into the reserve. So we are planning for the future and the things that you saw tonight. Already in, what you don't see is $500,000 Board of Education at this current time. We have already put into our maintenance repair reserve $500,000 to plan for the future. In addition, now I'm going to be presenting to you tonight the expenses and the revenue and the 2.34 increase, but just wanted to point out to you before Carol speaks that we have built into this budget $100,000 to add to the $500,000 that we already have.
Okay. So the maintenance repair is just one component of the budget. As you can see, the 2016-17 budget is made up of several items. You can see, though, that salaries and employee benefits make up a majority of the school budget. It accounts for over 76% of the budget. And the reason for that is because the school budget is personnel-driven. Back in the second budget presentation that was back in February, I actually went into the details of the salaries and the employee benefits. So you get a better idea of what that is. That's also on the website under budget if you want to look at that presentation. I wanted to bring to your attention the transportation line. You see that there is a reduction in the transportation.
So can you, before you jump in, can you just remind us for a second on salaries? And I know that we sat through it and you know, we went through the number of different people. On a straight headcount perspective, do you know off the top of your head where we are? So we have a $729,000 salary increase.
But
a number of FTE increase.
Across the district.
Across the district. So this salary line item, $21.5 million, represents how many headcount increase across the district, as opposed to just, you know, the 3%, 4%, 2%.
Yeah, 3.5, I think it equals up to.
The increase is
3.5 additional.
As far as FTE.
No, 3.5% increase on the money that you're looking at up there from a $20,812,000 to a $21,542. But to answer your question, I believe it's a 1.6.
1.6.
We're going to present tonight because you're going to hear a little bit about the 1% the clinician and the 0.6 load.
Okay.
The other ones are overagers, right, in classes for extra classes.
But and then there's so then the rest is 1.6. Okay, so 1.6 FTE, then the rest of that increase, as well as the rest of the employee benefits increase, is a result of contractual increases, and on the employee benefits side, health costs, pension, projected pension costs. Okay, got it.
Okay. In case you wanted to know why there's a reduction in transportation, because we haven't changed any of our routes, we haven't reduced any of our buses or our vans, and the reason for the reduction is back in 2015, when we prepared the budget, we prepared it based on $1.7 million. But when we entered into the 15-16 school year, the state had a decrease in the rate that was used. So because of that, we were spending less money, and then therefore the 16-17 budget was adjusted to reflect that increase. So overall, you'll see on the bottom, the total budget is a little over $41 million, an increase of a little over $1 million, or a budget-to-budget increase of 2.52%.
Just before the Board of Education, one question I'm sure you're probably going to ask yourselves is, has the administration accomplished every single one of the Board of Education goals that were put forth in August? The answer is yes, for every single one with the exception of one. And that one, if you remember, the Board of Education's charge to us was budget to budget at a 1.02%. So if you were to take this slide for what it is right now, you'd say, well, if it's a 2.52%, then you had a goal of a 1.02. Obviously, you didn't meet your goal. That's a difference of $208,000. So the if I wanted to know why you didn't meet that goal, reasons like adding $100,000 in for maintenance repair.
Does that include capital?
Including $75,000 for debt, including a clinician for $93,000. Now, those three will make it way over 216, 208. but I just want you to make you aware.
So you've met the goal, but for the ads on the maintenance, the $75,000 in debt service, which is excluded. If you look at the asterisks there, it says excluding.
Of the tax cap, not the bucket.
Yeah, understood. But it should it should exclude costs relating to the bond. And I think that there is language that says that in the goal, that the goals exclude increases as a result of the bond, for the levy at least.
For the
levy.
Okay.
For the levy. Not this particular goal.
Not this particular goal.
This is the one liner.
Okay.
But it's in there, and it's in at 1.02.
Right.
So I want to make sure I'm completely transparent to the Board of Education that this is one goal that we could certainly, you know, make. We would just have to subtract three things out, which we're not making that recommendation, but we want the Board of Education to be aware of that. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, going to have a balanced budget. You have the expenditure side, you have the revenue side. At the last board meeting on March 16th, I presented the tax cap calculation and the revenue for the 2016-17 school year. This slide is pretty much the same. The only thing that has changed since the last presentation is state aid. As everyone probably knows, the legislators passed the state budget on time, April 1st. And with that, the Seminole Richey School District received an additional $69,000 in state aid. So that number is reflected in the state aid number for 2016-17.
And now are we completely caught up with the gap elimination?
We're completely caught up with the gap. There is no more gap.
So what does that mean for next year? What's the increase? How does that play into it?
It's
not for 16-17, but 17-18 going forward.
17-18 means that the gap that the GEA that we had from 15-16 to this year was a little over $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's now added to our state aid base.
That's in the base, so it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away.
It's in the base.
Right.
And then the increase will be whatever they do on the budget.
Yes.
Yeah, and the goal would be to really push the Seminole Richey School District, the foundation.
Right.
Probably
yeah,
the
right
number one thing we're going to want to push, and we're going to push the legislators, and I'm sure through our committees, push that foundation aid, because that's where Seminole Richey, we feel, at this point in time, is not getting our equal share. We believe other districts are getting the lion's share of some of that money.
And you'll see here, too, the tax levy to the side, 2.34%. Mr. Stewart had discussed that in the previous slide.
So the aggregate, as I look at this, the aggregate application from reserves is 1.2. The implied fund balance would be $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the other reserves, the 121, that gets applied, the same amount that was applied this year?
That's correct.
Correct. And that is applied from the employee benefits reserve?
Employee benefits.
Which results in a decrease in that reserve?
That's correct.
And can you just take me through that quickly? Why is that okay?
Because their reserve was established. Ken has established that for the employee retirement contribution. Every year, your contribution increases, so you can use that reserve to kind of even things out over the years.
So are we using it for that, to even things out? When we take this and we apply that other reserve to our budget, it goes into a general bottom line. It goes into the budget to be applied throughout
right.
the budget.
Right.
So is there a concern? Do you have a concern that reserve is smaller, that specific reserve is smaller as a result of this application, thereby leaving us with some risk or
not? Not at this point, no.
Because?
It'll be several years.
What's that?
There'll be several years before that reserve is reduced to.
So if the auditors came in and looked, they'd say we're properly reserved
yes.
for that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I wanted to point out for the board, one of your Board of Education goals, if you see up here, was for additional programmatic offerings, or I think Mr. Forsby referred to as growth. And one of the things the Board of Education said is, look, we would like to see a 1.5% tax levy increase and no more, unless, and what it states up here, to the extent that task size is greater than 1.45, the Board of Education said up to an additional 0.5 can be or shall be included specifically for incremental programmatic offerings, such as electives, enrichment, and the middle years program things, for example. So what I wanted to point out to you was, what does that 0.49 equal? It equals $106,000 and change. And I wanted to, have Mr. Goldie show you in the next slide exactly how that money was used for our growth.
Good evening, everyone. We're continually looking at increasing our program offerings. We get amazing feedback from our administrative team, our teachers, our students, and our parents. And I believe two board presentations ago, the principals did an amazing job presenting some of their growth proposals for the 16-17 school year and beyond. So right up here is really has a nice summary of all those program enhancements with a dollar amount attached. And we have the additional advanced placement electives offering at the high school, certainly an area of upper-level classes where we want students to continue to challenge themselves. We know the more offerings we have in those areas, the more interest will peak, the more interest we'll have for a large amount of students to take advantage of those upper-level classes. So, and what types of things do we consider in that? Of course, teacher availability, teacher desire, student interest. So we have these two areas in social studies, comparative government, and human geography courses, elective offerings for next year. Additional load experience for the middle school in grade 6 and 7. Several years back, our load program was cut at the middle school, so another motivation for adding program is really adding program back to where we had it. And any comprehensive middle school program has a significant load program. Not only important to learn a second language, but we know the learning of a second language impacts other educational areas as well, especially in the area of ELA. When you learn a second language, it improves your native language skills significantly. So that additional load experience in the middle school, I think, will have a major program impact overall. Additional lab class offered to students taking Algebra 2 trig classes. Anyone that has been through it themselves or been a parent of an Algebra 2 trig student, it is the most challenging course in that math region sequence at the high school level. And we're continuing to try to develop ways to support our students in that endeavor. We've tried several different things here. We reach out to other districts and are constantly having conversations. I know Mr. Cavill just forwarded me something the other day about the math program at the high school. What are other people doing? What's going to get us the best success rate in those classes? A, so they can complete that region sequence, but they're also prepared for the next level of mathematics in high school and in college. So that additional lab class period, it will allow all students who are taking Algebra 2 trig to have a lab functioning similar to a science lab, but it gives the teachers and the students so much, a lot of flexibility in terms of time with a very, very dense curriculum. We also have an additional elective offering in the area of art. So similarly, in our student, we have a lot of students interested in the arts. To have flexibility with an elective allows us to serve those students and their interests. Beyond capturing students during their academic day, we know that the clubs really provide an overall well-rounded educational experience. And you can see elementary through high school, there's a theme here in the area of debate. Clubs, you can never, you can't put a price on the impact of what, sometimes kids go to school because of their clubs. And they've sometimes become the central part of their educational world. And we know through things that we've heard about Lego and science and book club and where our kids have such a myriad of interests. So our goal, of course, is to provide as many opportunities as we can for both the academic day and the extracurricular activities. So our total additional programmatic offerings are approximately $106,000, or part of that 0.49%.
How does the additional lab classes for Algebra and Trig 2 work specifically?
So in terms of like the actual schedule, in terms of the day?
Yeah, exactly.
So similar to a science lab. Yeah, so you'll, first period, right. on an A day, you go to Algebra 2 trig, second period, you stay in Algebra 2 trig. On a B day, first period, you go to Algebra 2 trig, second period, you would have, it would maybe work off of science lab, work off of PE, something else that operates on an A-B schedule.
So over the course of the year, somebody taking Algebra 2 trig will get 3/5 more classroom time? Is that what you're saying?
You'll get, yeah. So similar to a science lab, so you will meet for a double period every other day, single period every day.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so 3 days a week, you'll have... Yeah.
And what does, one week, a second week, or two weeks,
right.
You get a half.
It's like right, half. Another half.
Okay.
A four-year course is about 123 hours per year.
Right.
So a course with an attachment of a lab would actually be 180 hours. 183 hours a year.
It makes a significant difference, you know, and especially I can't emphasize enough the nature of this class where there is a gap. You know, for better or worse, the way it works is between that Algebra 1 skill level and that Algebra 2 skill level. And this time flexibility will significantly help them. And we've seen it because we have a few sections right now. So the idea of expanding it is that, you know, even like you have a strong math student, they hit a roadblock here. So it's not just to address the struggling math students, it's to kind of bring all of our math students in this, you know, on this region's track up a level.
And what exactly is the additional load experience in the middle school 6 and 7? I know we talked through with the NYP why it's important, but rubber hits the road. What exactly is this 57,000?
So that 57,000 would be for an additional 0.6 FTE.
That
so
will
that's
teach 6th and 7th grade.
And every load would be
every other day. Okay.
On the AP study.
Yep. Okay.
Just want to echo one thing. That's good. Thank you, Rena.
Thank you.
I want to echo what Rena said about passion, and I don't think that's the word you use about a specific teacher, you know, implementing this. But when you look at that human geography, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Dr. Patty Flynn Trace, because of her and her passion to add a course like that, that's what pushes us as administration to have those teachers like her who really want to do this and is willing to step up that extra class. Ricardo's going to talk about the next slide because at this point in time, you've heard in the enrollment presentation of the Board of Education, but we only left one thing hanging out. If you remember correctly, we left out the discussion about sixth grade and what exactly we plan to do with the sections with sixth grade. That's the only thing that we left out, and at that point in time, I think Mr. Soto had said that he wasn't sure at that point in time. There was a lot of discussions that
needed
to be done.
Yes. At the meeting, at the January 27th presentation, the enrollment projections for the 16-17 school year, there was one question that was left somewhat unanswered. And the reason I could not necessarily formulate a response to that question was the fact that the day before I had the conversation with Mrs. Bates as to whether or not we can incorporate five sections in sixth grade without any additional cost to the budget. At the evening of the presentation, like I said, I could not in true confidence say that I could do it, that we could manage that within the constraints of the schedule, especially considering the fact that we were planning to incorporate LOAP as part of the middle school schedule in grade 6 and 7, where it didn't exist in grade 6. So that is adding a piece to a puzzle that normally didn't have any pieces available. So that's something to consider. So at the January 27th presentation, one of the things we looked at is what would the class sizes be like if we had four sections, which would be 28, versus if we had five, which would be 21 students per section. After much discussion, after looking at the middle school schedule, having conversations with Mrs. Bates, Mrs. Pepe at the middle school, the guidance counselor, I can now say with full confidence that we can have five sections in grade 6 without the additional teacher. And let me explain exactly what that means for us. Basically, right now, sixth grade for the last few years has incorporated a math ELA lab. What it is that it's an additional period throughout the child's sixth grade schedule where math and ELA is sort of like incorporated into their program. What it is, it's the idea or the rationale behind that class is that if it is for that 1 year transition period and it is to reinforce
the learning that transpires in ELA and math in their normal class. This year, we actually only have four teachers teaching it, so each teacher actually teaches that fifth section for the four sections that we currently have at the middle school. Now, this year, we have somewhat of a small class. We have 97 students enrolled in sixth grade. Next year, we're having 109. So the possibility of doing that same sort of like machination doesn't necessarily work in the sense that we would have to now have class sizes at 28. We did not think that that was a feasible option for us. So we would like to reduce that. I mean, to reduce that now to five sections or increase it to five sections, and we would have 21 students. Now, the addition of the LOPE piece adds a little bit of trickiness to the schedule. So what we were able to do is incorporate the LOPE into an A-B schedule, not necessarily eliminating any of the other pieces that currently exist in a middle school schedule in sixth grade, such as, and let me just kind of run through the eight periods of a sixth grade schedule. Four periods are dedicated to the four majors, ELA, social studies, math, and science. Then there's a fifth section for lunch. There's a sixth section that normally is PE that bounces off of AIS every other day. And for the students that are not in AIS, they have a research elective that they take. In the future, we will continue to have that. So that's six periods. The seventh period is actually will be the low period that bounces off of music and art, which now is going to be on an A-B schedule. So we revamped the entire middle school schedule in terms of the electives to work off an A-B schedule to kind of fit this new sort of like middle school machination that we have. The eighth period would actually be family and consumer science. One of the things that we have to consider or keep in mind when running a middle school schedule is some of the New York State regulations that we have to abide by in terms of what we have to give students by the time they exit middle school, such as they need 1 year of a LOAT, they need 1 year of technology, they need a half a year of health, half a year of art and music in grades 7 and 8, and they also need a 3/4 of a unit in family and consumer science. Now, all of that has to be completed by grade 8. So we have to fit all the New York State regulations plus ELA, math, science, and social studies all within that sort of 8-pivot box. Now, looking at the math and ELA lab and the LOPE, which is what we want to introduce for next year, it became impossible to fit all of that in that 8-pivot bay. So what we're proposing for next year is to no longer incorporate the math ELA lab in sixth grade. And I have to remind the board that that machination, the ELA math lab, lives in isolation in grade 6. It doesn't exist in grade 7. It doesn't exist in grade 8. Once again, the logic behind it was to give the students that transition year with that additional support to reinforce the studies that the topics that are studied within the ELA and math class. So, once again, to incorporate everything that we need to incorporate in terms of New York State regulations, as well as the new LOPE program, we can no longer incorporate the math ELA lab. So, we are going to continue the elective program in terms of research, creative writing in 7th grade, and STEM in 8th grade, which is something that we're doing now. The AIS program will continue as an A-B schedule, which is what it is now. So there are no changes, essentially, to the AIS program. All the electives in the middle school, we actually changed the elective program in a sense. It used to be sort of this elective wheel that every quarter the students would get a different elective. We changed it so that the system of electives now work in unison in grades 6, 7, and 8. LOPE will be introduced to all students, grades 6 and 7, on an A-B schedule, which Ms. Zagolia referred to a moment ago in terms of adding that 0.6 of why we needed the 0.6 to add to the middle school.
So let me ask you a question. What's the impact of not having the ELA math lab? It was put in place for a reason. What are we going to see when that goes away in terms of...
It really depends. It depends on the perspective of the teacher that you talk to. It depends on the perspective of the student. as well as the parents. I mean, there was some great work that was done in previous years and in this year as well in terms of incorporating that additional time to look at, you know, certain components within ELA and math where students might have been struggling or might have needed that reinforcement.
How are we going to get it? What do you think?
I personally think that the AIS, if we identify the students correctly, which we will, the recommendations will come to us, and they always have come to us from the fifth grade teachers. We identify the deficiencies initially in September. We create a program, and we have a program in place to kind of address those deficiencies that exist, and we target them. I think they will be fine.
So do you think? But that's only certain students, because today everybody gets the ELA.
Today everyone gets it, absolutely. Once again, if you look at your sixth grade, if you look at any grade in particular, there's a segment of that population that may need remediation. There's a segment of that population that may not. So for that segment of the population that may be on grade level, may even be beyond grade level, which we have a segment of our population that fall into that category, the math ELA lab may not be an essential piece to it. And it's not, it should not be viewed as a remediation class in nature. It is sort of a, almost like a lab component to the math and ELA piece. Now, the one thing that you have to consider too, from a programmatic point of view, it lives in isolation. So it's great that it has sort of flourished in sixth grade, but the moment the student gets to seventh grade, it no longer exists. Nor does it exist in eighth, nor does it exist as the student transitions to the high school.
Algebra 2 trigger will, though.
It will, but it does exist. But the algebra piece.
You are paying attention. Yeah,
good observation. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. And algebra 2, which is a very arduous course.
This is something that we're going, like our sixth grade teachers are going to monitor this also and kind of give their feedback if this is, so we're moving this program. It's something that maybe, you know,
absolutely. I mean, it's something that we internally as administration, as teachers, we will continue to monitor and test whether or not this is successful. But one of the pieces that we have to keep in mind, too, is that we have constraints. It's an 8-period day. So if we wanted to, in the future, incorporate the math and ELA back into the program, something else has to give.
Well, now, this, I'm just looking at like the music, because if you take band or chorus, does that cover your requirement? Do you have to take general music?
You wouldn't, but you would have to reincorporate something else into the program, though. Because right now, we don't have study halls at the middle school. So if we are taking them out of the band and or out of the music component, that will fulfill sort of that one semester. The way it's going to work is that LOAT is going to be on an 8-day,
right,
for let's say period 2. On a B-day period 2, they're going to have art for an entire semester, mm-hmm, which equates to a 0.25, mm-hmm, in terms of FTEs or in terms of unit fulfillment that they have fulfilled. Now, at the second part of the semester 2, the students would take music. Now, it will fulfill the music piece, it won't fulfill the art piece. Does that make sense? Because you need a 0.5 in art and you need a 0.5 in music in grade 7 and 8.
I understand that, but that I'm saying that that band chorus component, does that fulfill that 0.5 requirement so that if you have kids who are taking that who are in need of some sort of support, would that...
It will for music, absolutely. It will.
So that could be, if you know, if we needed something like that, there is a little wiggle room.
We could definitely play around with that to see if we can now incorporate that time,
right,
for some additional remediation.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
No, that's, okay. I was just trying to relay what she was trying to.
Or additional FTEs for growth in the future.
Right.
You're touching upon something, yeah, as an administration.
Agreed.
As we move forward, if you said to us, well, listen, next year, the 0.49, 0.50 that the board wanted us to grow, that might be something we might recommend early in the day. Certainly something that, it might be that
we
or something else. You know, there are no study halls now.
Right.
Something always gives, no matter what. And if you, when you do the master schedule, that's what happens. Next slide. Okay, so I'm going to go to, we're going to have another proposal to the Board of Education in the next couple of slides after this. But before we do that, I wanted to make sure that the Board understands that where we are today and what we absolutely plan to propose on the 15th, on Friday, for you to vote and to adopt the budget. We're going to propose a tax levy increase of 2.34%, no matter what.
Which is below our tax cap, right?
Yes,
okay. Even though the tax cap is supposed to be 2%.
It's 2.39. 2.39 is our tax cap levy right now. You do know that 3.5% of that, 30.35, of course, is for the bond. But right now we're really presenting a 1.99 if you think about it that way. But in essence, it's a 2.34. That's what we're going to recommend next Friday.
And the percentage below which we need a simple majority is 2.39 because of a background that you've presented previously.
Okay. Correct. So I just want the board to know that that would normally be the end of our presentation. So if you have any questions, go ahead and ask those questions, and then I want to get into another slide.
I'm just curious what that 0.05, how much money does that actually equate to? The difference of
The 0.49?
No, you're saying 2.39 is what our cap is, and we're going at 2.34. So what's that 0.05? The difference, how much money is that? I'm just curious.
Right. Let's figure that out. If 1%, that's okay. If 1%, it's so minimal, but it's if 1% is, Carol, 200, you're that person, $200,000, you're going to take and make it a 0.05. Right? A 0.05. What is a 0.05?
$10,000.
Okay?
Yeah.
There you go. Okay? Okay, so we're good with that? Okay, so is there any other questions before you go to the next slide? Is there any other questions? Is there any other questions on the board? Because I want to tackle this budget, what we put up here.
I'm just curious why, I understand staying under the cap, I understand it, but that $10,000, where, you know, some people say we're leaving that on the table, so I'm just curious as to why.
We certainly are leaving it on the table, because right now the Board of Education goals was a 1.5 and a 5, which is a 2%, and the 0.35 was just added in. So that's a Board of Education goal. If you want to go above the goal, that's, you know, we'll put more in there. You're right, you are leaving that $10,000 on the table. And that happens quite a bit, but we're going below the cap, which you see in my last slide.
From my perspective, we put goals in place for a reason. It gives us targets to work towards and hit. And, you know, I think just to go out and get it because we can isn't always the best thing to do. You know, we overran the goal on the budget to budget for valid reasons. And, you know, I think we can explain those, and I think it's important that we do that. But from my perspective, I would like to be able to say, you know, we managed our expenses. We grew the program. You know, we put in the extra 0.5 for that growth. We didn't just get the 2% and say, you know, we're not going to be careful. Yeah. That's my thinking on it.
Any other questions?
Yeah,
any other questions set up for the community so far?
I have a question.
Yeah.
With the Algebra 2 trait, is the lab class required for anybody taking that class, or would a section be offered that doesn't have the lab component if the students didn't want the lab component? There are a lot of kids who are advanced math who also then probably have chemistry with a lab already, probably taking a lab and have a bunch of singletons in their schedule. That's going to eliminate the possibility for some of these great electives that we're offering.
We do have kids that are in labs like that have double lab that still, you know, have very full schedules. And the idea behind having the additional Algebra 2 math labs is that any level of kid could benefit from it. You know, at this time, I mean, the master schedule has not been completely finished at the secondary level. I mean, we're certainly, I mean, when we look at building the master schedule, we take individual student programs into consideration. Is there going to be a singleton? There is that possibility. We wanted to make sure that we could offer the Algebra 2 trait lab to make and maximize that, just knowing that the need was across the board.
Just if it could be looked at, if there's a possibility of a single section, if a student felt relatively confident with their math skills but wanted to explore
other things. Like if it bumped them out of something else that was equally important.
Like the science is, if that's a possibility.
We'll look at that.
And the only thing, have you considered possibly, I know we're pushing a lot on the Algebra 2 trait because that's the advanced, that's the path of the advanced Regents diploma. Would it deter some students who are already on the fence of, maybe I don't want to take that, that's not where I'm going, now they're going to have this whole extra every other day of math Is there a deterrent there?
That's an interesting question, and it's definitely a fear, but, you know, what we've seen, you know, with the Algebra 2 Trig labs at this point in time, although you get them, oh my God, going into two periods of math, we do know that the end result, the outcome was, you know, I can say, you know, firmly in terms of I entered this class, my, you know, looking at the numbers, the data, projected to not pass the Regents. We had 50% of kids who projected not to pass the Regents. Once they're in and they, you know, start to really build their confidence, they're in, and we're finding a lot of success with it. You know, so of course that thought of going to double period of math is always going to be a factor. We certainly wouldn't want it to be a deterrent. So one of the things we've asked our counselors to do as we embark upon scheduling is to really closely monitor, like, the kids' feedback in entering this type of program.
With the 6-step flow, because I'm going to have 6-step grade. So what will that look like? Is there an exploration component to both 6th and 7th next year, or is 6th going to look different than 7th, even though 7th didn't have the 6th?
Yeah, so that's a good point. We work with the Low Department now at two options. One being offering, and the Low Department, we're meeting with them and discussing these options, but one option is offering 6th grade as an exploratory program and offering half Spanish, half French, and having them make a decision going to 7th grade and then choosing their language and offering just Spanish or French in grade 7. The goal is to hire somebody that can teach both, obviously. And the other option, which one of both teachers leaning towards now, is to push into the 5th grade after the budget passes, if this should go through, obviously, in June, to push them to come do a foreign language day in 5th grade, come into the 5th grade classrooms, teach a lesson or a day or a half day, or so put together some kind of program as a department to come down and teach them Spanish and French and have them make a decision coming into 6th. From a both teacher's perspective, they like the idea of having then a full year in grade 6 and 7 in the chosen language rather than a year and a half, because they're taking a half year and it might look like they didn't choose. So we're meeting with Mrs. Soto, Mrs. Magoli, and the Moot teachers to decide which of those two programs we vote for.
So 7th grade will have a dedicated language
either way.
Year.
That's correct.
It may be exploratory.
Correct. Or they may choose that you might may get a letter home at the 5th grade fair at the 18th June of this year, making your choice after some type of foreign language celebration in 7th grade. The Moot department's meeting now to kind of decide, should this go through, which way would be best for the Moot department.
And now, is 6th grade low required in the middle years program?
Every other day it is recommended as a...
Is that something we have to do to be in compliance?
No, it's used the correct word, it's recommended. So you do not have to.
If it was, like, say, a financial constraint that prevented us from...
We didn't make this decision for the middle years program. We made this decision because we think it's the best interest of the students to have that foreign language for those 3 years.
And I think they had it before my time. And it was
had it
too.
Yeah.
And we've been, I think if you go back to the slides for 3 years, we've been talking about it with Mr. Stewart, and we've been saying,
I have one question. With respect to what Robin's point was with the general music, and having that as an availability, just something to consider. I don't know what the financial aspect would be for next year, but the 5th graders are coming off of very large class sizes.
Yes.
I, as a 5th grade parent of a 5th grader, have concerns for my daughter next year, especially in the area of math. And as much as I think the language is great, I really want her to have a good base in the math and the LA skills. So if she were going to be taking chorus or band and doing that, and there was an ability for her to have that component in the transition year to middle school, and the fact that they're coming off of large class sizes and things like that, if something could be looked at for even just a half a year as support for them, I would appreciate that.
In lieu of the music.
In lieu of the music for any of the students taking the music course. Because if they already have it, there are some things right, and I think you might find yourself with higher AIS numbers, so it might be the I think you're going to see it, so it might be the trade-off for those kids.
We could definitely look at that. To see how we could incorporate that as part of the schedule itself.
All right.
Any other questions? The community, the board, anything we presented thus far? Okay, so now that's what we're going to be saying on Friday.
However, listening to Mr. Gerhauser this evening, and as you might know, that I received that information that Mr. Gerhauser presented in the facilities committee in the beginning of the week, last week actually, Mr. Gerhauser and I had several questions or discussions about everything that he presented. Marcus used the word that I'm going to go back to talk about, urgent fashion. I found that interesting to say. I should have put that in my presentation. Once we read all of the things, we began to, as a group, myself, Ms. Ingolia, Mr. Soto, Mr. Crow, Ms. Bates, and so on, began to look into some of the concerns and to find out if there were any that were of urgent fashion. One of the things that really kind of stuck out in our minds was the middle school bleachers. Because although if you go to the middle school, and I'm there with my child on weekends and we sit in the bleachers, you don't really notice that there's really a problem. You're sitting in the bleachers and you say, wow, they seem sturdy and everything seems fine. But when we went there and we started talking to some of the experts, and I probably did the same thing that I'm sure the facilities committee, we realized that that we believe that we do have an urgent situation there. Not right now, but we see it for the very near foreseeable future, that if you look underneath the bleachers and you start looking at the mechanics of the bleachers, looking at kick plate shifting and things of that nature, when you speak to the custodians about pulling that in and out, things of that nature, it's a major problem. And we as a group have some concerns. So because of that, I said to Carol Perkins, I said, look, as we finish the budget this year, do we have money in our surplus that is going to be above and beyond what we expected? So we expect a $1.3 million surplus. And as you noticed tonight, we applied that surplus to the future budget. We've done it every year. We brought it down from at one point in time, I think, $2.1 million. So we have it at $1.3 million of the applied fund balance. But I asked Carol Perkins, are we going to have more? Could we absorb this in this year's budget? Could we absorb this $150,000? The answer was yes. So that was a great answer. The second question wasn't a yes. The answer wasn't a yes. So the second question is, well, if we did it right now as an emergency repair and we have the money in our budget, this is not touching any money that we've reserved or that $600,000, or what's about to be $600,000, is it eatable? And the answer was no. So if you decide to do it right now, Russ, you can't do it right now. You could do it, but you're going to spend $150,000. You're going to get beautiful bleachers put in, but it's not aidable. So then I asked the question of whether or not it would be aidable if we put it in the budget now. And the answer was yes. So we started to actually go out to some bleacher companies, and Gary, actually, is Gary still here? He's not here now. We started with the bleacher companies and talk about that. But in the end, we realized that if we put it in the budget right now, we would get 68.2% of the project, or the amount of the project, back the following year. See, now at the end of this year, we're able to address the little things. And we spoke about, I know, a bunch of the things I wrote here on, when we were on the phone. We talked about main office flooring at the middle school, a couple thousand dollars, installing surge protectors, boiler room repairs, the armrest of tablets at the high school. Those were little things, and at the end of the year, we were able to address those things, which we will. But when you get to something of this number, of $150,000, it's not a little item, not something that you can just address that way. But when we found out that we could get 68.2% of it back if we put it in the budget, it made sense. It made sense to all of us as we looked at it and said, well, it is something that we want to put in, or we should put in, but it has to be voter approved. It means it has to be in the budget. The only thing that we did look at is, well, if you do that, your reported tax cap levy, the amount that you report to the state, changes. And if you look at this slide here, you'll see that, well, Russ, if you put this in and you put $150,000 on the expense side of your budget, your tax cap reported number to New York State goes up a 0.69%. It would go to a 3.08. My only concern was, and I said to Carol, but if I'm not mistaken, if we have the additional money and we're able to fund it now, and we're going to get 68% on our dollar, then would it increase what our presentation is going to put out as a 2.34? And the answer is no. So what we're proposing to the Board of Education is to put this project in now. We will report to New York State, which we're allowed to do, the 3.08, but it's not going to change anything on the budget except the expense side, which I'm going to show you next. But the same tax levy is going to go out to the community at a 2.434%.
And we lay out the $150,000, and then that $102-ish we get back over 15 years.
Exactly. If you do that math calculation in your head, that was pretty impressive.
I cheated.
$102, I didn't know that. That's great. Yes, the answer is yes. So to us, again, as administration, it makes sense to us, especially after we went over and really looked at this and said, I think it was 38 years, I forget the number you said, but I think you said around 38 years. It's certainly time to replace these. Gary, who looked at it, one thing I heard what Mr. Novato said, I don't think he's even losing people, slowly. But, you know, he talked about getting it from another school. You know, one thing we did find out is that we can make the bleachers much longer, meaning that you have a divider right there, but as you can see, there's a lot of space between the two bleachers right now. We're able to go all the way up the divider, get a lot more space. They would be electrical, safe, you know, being able to press a button and coming out. So the seating would actually be larger. We looked at the size of what we could put in there for the person sitting down.
So that money comes back. It comes back in as general on the revenue side, or state aid, or building aid. So you'd see an increase over 15 years of whatever the math is. Did you do the math? $5,000 a year, $7,000 a year in building aid over a 15-year period. And that building aid, when it comes in, goes into our general fund and is used for any purpose. Is that the answer? Okay.
So really what would happen is the next slide is the exact same slide that Carol showed you the first time, except the change in the adding additional transfer to a capital fund of $150,000, so that number changes. And of course, the budget-to-budget on the bottom right-hand side also changes to the 2.89.
And where does that come from? It comes from our general reserve, that $150,000. What account goes down?
Okay, as you see here, if we add a line on the revenue side designated for renovation and repair, and as Mr. Sueda mentioned before, because of the looking at the surplus, how we're going to end up at the end of the year, I anticipated an additional $150,000 above the $1.3 million, and that could be used to fund this project.
And if it wasn't, it would just fall to the unreserved fund balance.
That is correct.
Okay. But the key is, again, now we got the next slide. That's fine. You can stay on that slide. That's okay. Is the 2.34, that nothing is going to change from the couple slides before this one of what we were recommending to present.
We're basically paying for this out of our bank account. The voters have to approve us spending the money from our bank account.
Correct. But I want to make sure I'm clear again that our surplus for this year, not taking it out of our $500,000 that I mentioned and the additional $100,000, this is right now, we are looking at it month by month, day by day. Now, at this point, we get closer, we are going to be able to absorb that in our surplus that we're going to be receiving at the end of this year.
And you'll get in future years, you'll get the payback on that project.
And it still stays at a 2.34%. So, in the end, basically this slide here is again exactly the same as a couple slides before, with the exception of the reported, and that's why I made sure I underlined that word, and reported New York State tax cap calculation would be a 3.08. Our proposed tax levy increase will still be a 2.34%.
So is this line item to use this money and designate a for renovation or repair, is that a separate line item in the voter approval?
No.
No?
No.
No.
Okay.
And then the last, or two slides, Catherine, if you want to go to the next one, Carol. I mean, this is just the...
Yeah, this slide here is, I had presented this at the last meeting, and it's just an overview of the tax levy, concentrating just on the 16-17 year, where it states, as Mr. Stewart mentioned before, 3.08% is the actual New York State tax cap calculation, and we're proposing going out with a 2.34%, which includes the 0.35% for the voter-approved capital project. Okay. And then the last slide here, this is, again, it's proposing what we're proposing for the tax levy, and we have our infamous cap. So we have the state is 3.08%. We're below the cap of 2.34%, and again, that just requires a simple majority because it's below the cap. And again, it's the 2.34 comprised of 1.99% for operating expenses and 0.35% for the voter-approved capital project, the debt service. And so that equates to 2.34% increase in the tax levy, equates to an annual cost for the average household of $165. So if your 2015-16 tax bill for school taxes is around $7,000, you have $165, and 16-17, your estimated tax bill would be $7,225.
So if the Board of Education might, I don't know if you want to talk about it at all or you feel very comfortable, but you know, we're given the green light. We're going to continue the path that we're going. The only thing that was left out at one point in time was the sixth grade. We did explain that to you. Ms. McGill brought up something new now tonight, but I'm not as concerned about that because that could be actually an additional class. That's not something with the FTEs. We do have a line in our budget for that, and you do approve additional classes. In fact, tonight you want to approve a few that are either at the elementary school for students that need reading service, additional reading service. But if you are comfortable, you want to ask questions.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you have any questions you want to ask the administration?
No, not really.
Okay. I'm good. I think that this is, you know, I think that this is prudent. I think that the allocation of funds that we've got is great. I think that, you know, keeping it in line with our goals for the most part, other than the budget for the reasons that we've talked about, make a lot of sense. I think that growing the program, you know, the focus that we've got, the additional programs make sense, subject to, you know, figuring out the best way we can do it. From a financial perspective, I support it. I think that commend you for figuring out a way to, you know, get the bleachers done, get some capital projects done, and get reimbursement. I think that's a great thing. And I would say that, you know, as we go into budget periods next year and the year after, you take what the facilities committee's done and think through, is there other ways we can do that, as well as getting $100,000 in for these types of programs, you know, and I think that there's a real kind of meeting with everybody to figure out how that $100,000, I just want to be crystal clear, is above and beyond the general maintenance. We got to change filters, we got to do this and that, that's $88,000 or whatever it is, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, I feel very comfortable with this. I mean, I think that we're going to really have to make sure everybody understands in our documentation that 2.39 is not above the 2% tax cap. You know, I've heard that 1,000 times, and it's, you know, everybody understands. I understand the math, you understand the math, but that's a communication that we've got to get, because what a shame if that becomes a talking point. You know. But no, I
thank you
for it. Great job. I really think it is very clear. So before we start, I just want to take a second. So, for those of you that have been to the meetings over the last year, when did we start the AIS negotiations, discussions?
Over a year.
A year and a half. So the district, the board, the administration have had, you know, a number of conversations. Negotiations. We've had a grievance filed by the Center for Teachers Association with regard to our use of our provision of AIS services. And I want to take a minute to explain a contractual item that you'll see on tonight's agenda. We've successfully negotiated a resolution to the AIS agreements brought by the Seven Regional Teachers Association regarding our provision of the AIS services. We feel that the settlement is positive, is a positive one for the community, the district, and the Teachers Association, as it allows us to manage our budget in a fiscally prudent manner while ensuring the students receive the services they need with appropriate oversight. The agreement provides for a new class of teachers' assistants who provide AIS services, which will go into effect 2 years from now. It provides for oversight for the implementation of lead teachers for each AIS teaching assistant and delineates the duties of each, both the TAs, the AIS teaching assistants, and the lead teachers. We're also happy to report that we're able to work with the union as a result of this settlement to provide a final incentive for those teachers in our district who are past the first eligible to retire incentive that we currently offer and therefore weren't eligible for the existing retirement incentive. Finally, the agreement addresses certain issues subject to an ongoing dispute with regard to health insurance reimbursement. While at times the negotiations were contentious, I want to personally thank Mike Kaczynski and the Center Emergence Teachers Association for continuing to work with the district to get to a mutually beneficial resolution. Thank you. So you'll see that will be on the agenda tonight. That brings us to the next section of our agenda, which is questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. Does anybody have any questions regarding tonight's agenda? Okay. Yeah, motion to adopt the regular minutes of the regular meeting, March 16, 2016.
Motion.
Motion second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carried unanimously. So I just want to, before we get to number six, just want to take a second to, number six is our acceptance of resignations for purposes of retirement. And I'm going to speak to Ms. Brasso, who, you know, with my child's teacher, I haven't had experience with anybody, so to the extent that I haven't said this with regard to others, I hope nobody takes it offensively, but I wish you absolutely well, you know, phenomenal teacher, and really the model that, in my view, everybody should strive for. So, you know, congratulations to you, and thank you for what you've done for me and my family.
Recommended action that on recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the following individuals' resignations for purposes of retirement.
Motion.
Kathleen Lasso, Jeanette.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Let's go through 7 through 11.
Does anybody have any opposition to go through 7 through 11?
I have a question on number 10.
So, yes, we do. 7 through 9.
Sorry.
Motion to adopt items 7 through 9 on the agenda.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
The district recently advertised for candidates to fill various teaching and support staff vacancies for 2015-2016. Candidates were interviewed by committees, building principals, and or the superintendent. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following appointments.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion.
I'd like just a little more information about the reading, the extra reading class in the kindergarten. I'm guessing that's good for kindergarten. Is it in Clark, Mr. Rico?
Yeah, correct.
I'm just curious, for me, something that I want to watch, if we're adding this extra piece now for future, if we, you know, now it's April and we're adding this, I guess, extra teachers because we don't have enough reading.
Right, we have more students, additional students, and a lot of it comes down to schedules that don't fit in, and these two teachers will work off of each other during their prep period to address those students.
Okay.
So it's extra help for additional students?
It's extra reading services.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you're right. So, and I think that, are you questioning the timing of it as well? Because I think as the year progressed, you know, especially in the kindergarten year, these were students who were not initially identified, but over time were identified as that would benefit from additional reading support during that time.
And I'm glad that we're giving them the support, absolutely. You know, but it's also something that, like, you know, in the future years, I think, you know, if we need to look at that, if, you know, in kindergarten, if we're having this problem, it's something that we should be aware of at least
watching.
Absolutely.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following contracts in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contracts, as well as at the established cost contained in said contracts, and authorizes the president to sign it.
Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following responsible bid vendor, School Construction Consultants Incorporated, to provide the construction management services for the capital project.
Motion. Second. So, Carol, can you talk to us a little bit about this one? What level of review is a law firm given for the construction management?
As far as... They would look at... we had John Grillo as the architect review all the submissions for the construction management services, and he's worked with several of them, and at the time, School Construction Consultants, he's worked with them. He's had nothing but good experiences with them, and they came in at the lowest amount.
So we've looked at some differences between general contracts and construction management. How much time have you spent looking at this?
Well, I looked at all of the proposals. I read through the RFP. I have a little bit of background and knowledge of SEC. I know of them.
Right.
As far as I know, they're a good company.
Well, with regard to the things that we talked about, where they're backstopping, they've got the insurance, they've got, are only comfortable that...
Yeah, absolutely. They're essentially part of our team as a construction manager. Mm-hmm. This is what I had delineated in that diatribe that I put out. this is the set of eyes that we need to make sure that we're on point. Hold the meetings, hold the individual vendors, accountable.
And where's our recourse if there is a problem? Is it against these guys, or is that...
No, it's still against the individual contract.
The individual contract.
I mean, if it's something that happens in process, something shortly thereafter, they're on the hook to some degree. But you start to move into that 5-year, 10-year down the road, window where we start to find problems with lentils. There's nobody left.
Right.
So we need to make sure that it gets built correctly the first time, and I think that's where these people are key. And we hold them accountable as a group, and have the weekly or biweekly construction meetings and make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I'd like to stick.
So if a guy pours bad concrete, and these guys are there, and perhaps they poured it in 3 inches thick instead of 4, and it cracks a year later, can we sue these guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
but. Not 5 years down the road. Mm-hmm. You obviously can sue anybody, and then I'm sure these people will be around. But the key is to make sure that it's done correctly the first time, and that we don't wind up in that situation. I think that's where this is important.
Can we maybe call Grillo and our lawyers tomorrow to walk through this? We can prove this tonight.
You're approving their services,
right?
We don't have a contract. We prepare the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Gerson review. Let's do that. Yeah. As long as we have the opportunity to have Gerson review.
This is just approving them for construction.
And we also had Gary Corral do the same thing. So there were three. So it was Darryl, Gary, and Grillo.
No, these might be the right guys.
No, I'm just saying they all came back with the same answer. I think you want to speak to Grillo more about
I want to make sure that 3 years from now, when there's a roof leak, somebody doesn't say, why didn't you guys have somebody on the roof?
Understood.
Okay, motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor? Yes, motion carries unanimously. Tonight we move the rest 13 through. Does anybody have any opposition going 13 through 17? Motion to adopt items 13 through 17 on the agenda tonight.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. Brings us to the next section of the agenda. Questions, comments from the community on items not on the agenda tonight. Anybody have any? Great. The next board meeting is on Friday night, April 15th, 2016, 7:30 here in the district office. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussions regarding proposed pending or current litigation, collective negotiations under the Taylor Law, the CMPA, other matters of the disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion.
Second.
All in favor? Yes. Motion carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Thank you.